how do we make this connection? What's the bridge between what happens in the prayer room and what takes place in the city, in the sphere of influence that we've been given? And I think that's been a missing piece for a lot of people that have been exposed to, you know, God's heart for prayer and worship. Is not everybody kind of sees that bridge.
You're listening to the Presence Pioneers podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast today. I'm your host, Matthew Lilly. I'm here with my friend and special guest, Gerald Murphy from Garden City Church in Columbus, Ohio. We're excited to hear about his journey in planting a church there that is passionate about the presence of God, prayer, worship, missions, revival, discipleship, and they are amazing. I was able to be with them earlier this year and excited to have this conversation with Gerald. And those of you who are a part of the podcast, man, it's great to have you be a part of our family. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for giving us feedback and comments and likes and reviews and all the different things you do to engage with us. We really appreciate that. And if you're new to the podcast, welcome. We love the presence of God. We love worship, prayer, missions, revival. And so we have conversations and Bible teachings kind of around those themes. So if you're excited and passionate about those, you found the right podcast. So please hit follow or subscribe to continue to track with us wherever you're listening in. Gerald, welcome.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah. Would love to just have you introduce yourself. Like I said, you and your wife founded Garden City in Columbus, Ohio, and are continuing to lead and build there. But just give us a quick intro, your family, some of your ministry history.
My wife, Lauren, and I, we have been in Columbus pretty much all of our life. I moved here when I was 7 from Mansfield, Ohio, which is just about an hour north of Columbus. And yeah, we both grew up on the west side, went to high school together, and really, you know, yielded, surrendered to the Lord fully in our young adult years. I was 20, she was 19 when we got married, and just have been doing our best to just pursue the Lord and his heart for our lives. And we've got 4 amazing kids, a 13-year-old, 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 6-year-old. And through our journey, we've had a lot of opportunity to serve the local church, to serve in the marketplace, but just chasing after Jesus has been at the center of it all. And around 2019 is when we felt the call to start Garden City Church. And it took me quite a while to finally give up and say yes to God's, you know, desire in that respect. And so it was actually right in the middle of the pandemic, we finally said yes. And we ended up officially starting Garden City in September of 2020. And it's been a wild 4 years. I cannot believe we're going into year 5. It's absolutely crazy. But we're loving it. God is moving in powerful ways. And we're just seeing the beauty of kind of these different expressions and streams that have been a part of our journey for the last 15 years, but kind of in a compartmentalized way, where we're really seeing how through the local church, there's a real blessing that allows you to see all of those puzzle pieces fit together.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just honored to be on this podcast with you and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah. So give us a little bit of the backstory. I know that you had shared with me before that you guys were having some meetings in homes, maybe spread out in different parts of Columbus or something like that, if I'm getting this story right. Like, how did you guys get to the point of like, oh yeah, we feel like we're called to plant a church?
So as I said, we had been serving in the local church for some years. We were young adult pastors, helped launch a school of ministry, 3 years kind of combination of spiritual formation, discipleship, theological training, hands-on training, outreach, all that. And then we also had an internship that was connected to that and ended up, you know, shifting to focus on that more, started pastoring a local nonprofit in our city called the Columbus Dream Center. In addition to that, we were serving as director of community development. I was serving as the director of community development for another nonprofit that was more so kind of in the marketplace realm of things. And my wife, she had a passion to start her own spa and salon that also partnered with a local nonprofit that was trying to fight against sex trafficking. And through those kind of official roles, prayer and worship has always been at the core of who we are. And so there's several houses of prayer in Columbus. I know you're really good friends with Priscilla Wan and the crew at Faith, Hope, Love House of Prayer.
Yeah.
Brian Williams in Hope City. They have been such inspirations to my family and to our community. And so there was that piece that was also a huge, again, just focus for us. When we were no longer young adult pastors, we just missed being in living rooms with a bunch of hungry, wild, you know, young adults that wanted to go after Jesus. So in addition to all those roles that we were kind of serving in the local church, the marketplace, my wife's spa and salon, we decided to start having prayer nights and Bible studies at our house. And we called it the Garden Project. Yeah. And we were able to kind of pull from these different spheres of influence and relationships that we were making across these different areas. And so there were so many different churches represented, people from different, you know, denominational backgrounds, theological backgrounds. And God just really kind of marked it. And his presence was just so real. And more people started showing up. So we basically decided, hey, we're going to kind of put a cap to what's happening here in the living room. There was probably 20, 25 people that we would let come to the living rooms. But then once a month, we'd rent out coffee shops so that we could open it up to more people. And so we started doing that, I believe, in 2019. And that just kind of took a life of its own and started to grow. And we made it very clear we had no intentions of starting a church. And I mean, for me, if you would have asked me, you know, 10 years ago, do you ever see yourself pastoring your local church? I would have said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
No chance in the world. And so be careful what you tell God what you're not going to do. I was actually in Israel in the fall of 2019 and just was in my hotel room in the morning. During the morning, I think it was like a Tuesday, just doing my devotionals. And I felt the presence of the Lord just come so strong. And I just heard him say all these different things that you're doing in these different kind of lanes. I want you to bring it all under one roof and mm-hmm. start a church and bring all of these different emphases under one house, under one umbrella. And that's when I first knew that he wanted us to start Garden City Church. And I did not say yes right away. I wrestled for about 10 months. I didn't want to do it for a lot of reasons, insecurities, fears. You know, I have a huge heart for unity. I just didn't see how, A, we'd be able to steward all of these different passions under one umbrella, under one roof. And then, you know, B, I really thought it was going to cut us off from a lot of the real relationships that we had made with other pastors and other leaders. And I just didn't want to. I just had no, desire to start a church.
Yeah.
But in May of 2020, the Lord finally wrestled me down and, you know, we were all trapped in our houses right in the middle of the pandemic. I would try to like pray for the nations and like intercede in my living room. Rick Pino was doing like these live sets every single day. So I'd have that pulled up on my screen. And every time I'd go to pray, it was like God wouldn't let me talk about anything else but starting this church. And so finally, it was a Friday, May 30th of 2020, I believe. We said yes. We just threw our hands up and we're like, okay, Lord, you win. We'll do it. Thinking that we were going to have, you know, a year or so to prepare and get ready.
Right.
The very next day, I get a phone call from a dear friend of ours. Her dad built a church on the West Side. He had been gone for about 12 years. He had passed away 12 years prior to 2020. But the daughter, she would always get called by the elders when they were trying to make a decision about a new pastor. Their pastor had recently left, and the elders were saying to her, hey, we not only are open to a new pastor, but we're even open to somebody coming here that wants to start a new church. Do you know anybody? Well, she calls me and says, hey, my dad's old church is either looking for a new pastor or looking for somebody to start a church. Do you know anybody? This is the next day, Matthew. And I'm just like, is this happening? So we told her, well, actually, last night we finally prayed about it and said yes to moving forward with starting a church. She's like, well, you got to come see these elders and see these buildings. Long story short, that very next day on Saturday, May 31st, we ended up meeting with the elders of this church. And by the end of the meeting, they were basically giving us the keys. They were saying, we want you to have these buildings. We think you're supposed to start your church here. And, you know, it was just wild. You know, we had got the blessing from our pastors the day before to start praying about it. That was my request to our pastors was, hey, do you bless us to just start praying about this? And then within 24 hours, we are now being given buildings. So it's just been a wild ride, but that's how the journey started.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you got a building, and then by September, you said, of that year, 2020, you guys officially launched Garden City.
You're off and running. Yes, sir.
Love it. So where did the name come from, Garden City?
That's kind of unique. That's a great question.
Yeah.
That's a great question. It's funny. I think John Mark Comer wrote a book called Garden City.
Okay.
I think it was right around the pandemic or before the pandemic. And so many people have asked if I've read the book, and I haven't. I need to, because I've heard it's really good. So a lot of people assume that's the connection, but I still haven't read the book. For us, the name really is connected to, I would say, the passion that we have to come into agreement with God's heart in the beginning, right? The Garden of Eden, all that he communicated that he wanted for humanity to be made in his image and likeness, to walk in dominion and authority over creation. And then as far as city, you have the New Jerusalem and this beautiful picture that we get in Revelation of where this whole thing is headed after Jesus returns and he's seated on his throne in Jerusalem. And he's going to rule and reign with righteousness and justice. And we tell our communities, like, every time you say Garden City, you're coming into agreement with God's original plan, original dream, and you're coming into agreement with the hope of what we have to look forward to, knowing it's the gospel.
Yeah.
That restores what was lost in the garden. And it's the gospel that guarantees our access, our inheritance in regards to what's to come. And so that's what Garden City is all about.
Yeah, so good. You invited me in to share about the priesthood. And I mean, to me, that is at the core of what you're describing. And
absolutely.
Both what God had for Adam and Eve in the garden originally and our eternal purpose as a kingdom of priests to rule and reign on the earth. So
absolutely.
I love that. I say it's our original occupation, our eternal occupation is to be a kingdom of priests.
Yes.
To God. And so it's like the garden is like the original, the city is our eternal destiny. So I love that. Love the name. My wife's a big gardener, so she loved it as well when she was able to be there with you guys. But so give us a glimpse of what's happened, man, the last 4 years or so, as you guys are been going on this journey. What's been happening? Any cool God stories? Any cool testimonies? What's going on?
Absolutely. So I would say one of the first kind of big encouragements for us was our community center. So we have our church building, you know, which obviously allows us to have services on Sundays, children's ministry, our office space. But our other building used to be a daycare for about 20 years. And I had no intentions of restarting the daycare. but you have this 4,000 square foot, you know, space that has just kind of, you know, different rooms that are, you know, surrounding this big open space. And there was an awesome kitchen. And we just kind of immediately got vision for an idea that we had already been praying into before we started the church for what we called the Eden Center. So staying with the same theme.
Yeah.
Eden for us stands for encouraging, developing, enlightening, and nurturing when it comes to serving the community. And we even have a second acronym when we're talking to business people, but edifying neighborhoods and economic development. But for us, it's just this idea that in this central space, you can see a collaboration of ideas and, you know, just ministries working together, for-profits, nonprofits, serving the city of Columbus together and advancing the kingdom. And as a very young church, we were able to raise $250,000 to completely renovate the space. We've had just so many different ministries use the building, from this incredible ministry called The Bridge that's teaching Somali Bantu youth how to read and write in English while sharing the love of Jesus. Other after-school programs. You heard me mention my wife's passion to partner with a nonprofit that fights against sex trafficking. Many people don't know, but Columbus, Ohio is top five in the nation when it comes to sex exploitation, human trafficking. Wow. And there's this incredible ministry called the Freedom Collective that has just been on the front lines in that particular area, you know, really contending for justice for those who have been impacted by just the tragedy of sex exploitation, human trafficking. And they were our very first resident in the space. And so they have a headquarters to operate out of. We have the privilege of partnering with them for one of their main programs that happens here on the West Side. So just seeing that come together, and from day one, kind of seeing this blend of, you know, traditional local church ministry with, you know, very just tangible community impact and collaboration with other ministries and even for-profit, you know, kingdom-minded businesses. That's probably the second testimony I love to share. Is there's a Messianic Ethiopian Jewish woman named Miriam who has been helping her family as they've been relaunching their coffee business back in, I believe, Eritrea is where they're from. And she needed space to store all of her coffee. And hearing her story, just all the ways that God has just been leading her and her family. It was so cool to partner with her. And so one of our offices just filled with Ethiopian coffee bags.
But it smells great.
It does. But just seeing the way that God has blessed her and just partnering with stories like that. And even this whole idea of the Garden of Eden and New Jerusalem for us, it's like, how do we partner with the God-ordained calling, dream, and vision that he has given to individual sons and daughters as they live out, you know, what it is that God has for them as a part of his royal priesthood. And the community center, the Eden Center, allows us to do that in a really neat way as a local church. So I always love telling that story. And then to round off the theme, you've got Garden City Church, the Eden Center, and then our cafe, our coffee shop is called Four Rivers. And so you got the four rivers that come out of the Garden of Eden. But it's just been a really fun ride.
That's amazing. That's so cool. Yeah, I think with the whole theme of going back to Eden or our original calling, that kind of thing, it wasn't just to, you know, sort of float around and just sort of in this like worship, you know, eyes closed, pretty music playing the whole time. Like God put Adam in the garden to work it and to keep it. And there was a, you know, some responsibility and some work to do. And so I love that you guys are helping make space for the people that are, for lack of a better term, sort of getting their hands dirty, you know, in the world, out into in the middle of everything, making a difference in the earth, stewarding things to shift the city, really, and beyond. Hey guys, this is Matthew. We'll get back to the episode in just a moment. If you're enjoying the podcast, please consider joining Presence Pioneers Premium, our brand new subscriber community. Paid subscribers will get exclusive premium content such as bonus podcast episodes, exclusive articles, early releases, and more. Presence Pioneers will be releasing its first e-course in 2024 with many more to come. And the Presence Pioneers premium subscribers will always have full access to the entire library of online courses. Visit media.presencepioneers.org or click the link in the description to join today. You can become a premium member today for an introductory price of only $5 a month. When the price goes up in the future, as our library of resources grows, you can stay subscribed at the original price. If you've enjoyed our podcast for a while, becoming a premium member is a simple way for you to help us cover the cost of producing this podcast and partner with Presence Pioneers in equipping the church with resources for day and night prayer, prophetic worship, missions, and revival. Visit media.presencepioneers.org to sign up today. For the kingdom of God. So,
well, I know when you spoke here just a few months ago, I believe your focus was, you know, the priesthood and culture.
Right.
And it's like, how do we make this connection? What's the bridge between what happens in the prayer room and what takes place in the city and the sphere of influence that we've been given? And I think that's been a missing piece for a lot of people that have been exposed to, you know, God's heart for prayer and worship. Is not everybody kind of sees that bridge. Like, how do you help people recognize that one of the best things that we can do to actually pull down strategy and blueprint and, you know, just vision to see solutions and to see kingdom impact in the world is to establish these rhythms of day and night prayer and worship. That's where we hear the heart of the Lord and he releases, you know, again, just his wisdom to make a difference. And that's been really neat to see how that plays out for us, because the prayer room is at the center of everything that we're doing. I mean, we started.
Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, we started our prayer room from day one. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday has been our most consistent rhythm, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and now 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. And then Monday night, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And that's one of the areas of our ministry. We've never had to beg for volunteers. It's kind of a miracle. We've always had gatekeepers. We've always had people willing to just serve in the prayer room. And when people kind of ask, it's like, you're only a few hundred members. How are you getting all this done? My answer is because we minister to the Lord first. You know, we tell people when they ask, like, what's the vision of Garden City? And in one statement, Garden City exists to minister to the Lord as a family and obey him daily, period. Mm. And when that's really the core, I believe the grace needed to walk everything out is just always there. And so You know, I tell people, if I ever have to make a choice between the pulpit or the prayer room, I'm going to choose the prayer room 10 out of 10 times because that really is the engine to it all.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things we're talking about a lot on the interviews and teachings for this sort of season of the podcast is really this idea of being a presence-centered community. And presence-centered communities, what does it mean to make the presence of God central in all that you do as a community, as a church, as a ministry, as a family? I think you just touched on it right there. It's like when the rubber meets the road, what are you going to prioritize? His presence? Are you going to prioritize the place of prayer? Or are you going to let that get pushed to the side because there's quote unquote work to do? And I love, there's that old quote from Martin Luther where he says something like, I have a lot to do today, so I think I'll have to pray more, or something like that. Yeah. I forget exactly how it goes, but you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
And I love that mindset. It's like, okay, we've got a lot God wants us to do, so we need to pray more, not less.
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite quotes from him. I think it's like, I've got so much to do today, I've got to pray for at least 3 hours or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I love that. A whole different mentality. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Anything else on that, just in terms of the prayer room? I mean, what, you guys are a local church, and I think God is stirring a lot of churches to begin to embrace culture of prayer, which is exciting. He's stirring people to start new churches that are presence-centered with a culture of prayer in them as well. So yeah, have there been challenges with holding the line on that, or is it you've just really had a grace to do it?
I think the grace has just kind of been effortless. I think in That's part awesome. Because of when we got started, you know, we launched in the middle of the pandemic, right. And there were just no rules. I think everyone was open to a different approach, a different emphasis. You know, I think we've seen a lot of kind of churches go back to, you know, things as normal, but I think there's a lot of churches who have adopted just new rhythms, new emphases. But there was a lot that we had to gain from planning our church in the middle of the pandemic when there was such an openness to reimagining what the priority of our gatherings and the priority of our rhythms as a local church could look like. Yeah. And we just have been blessed with a team that was so bought in to this idea of being a presence-centered, a presence-first community. You know, even during the pandemic, when we were still just the Garden Project meeting in living rooms and coffee shops, we were getting lit up by Acts 13. And for many of us, that was like the first time that we were really diving into this whole Church of Antioch model. None of us came from churches that were fighting to merge the needs of the local church with the house of prayer, with God's heart for the Great Commission. And so things were really conceptual. There was just a lot of dreaming, a lot of what if, you know, and starting Garden City allowed us to take those concepts and take all the things on the whiteboard of what if, and yeah. just kind of experiment with what it could look like to make these things more tangible because of the blessing of having our own building, the blessing of just seeing the support so early on from even a financial and resource perspective, in addition to just the grace of the Lord. I think it's allowed us to just be committed to this path. And those who feel called to this have just been drawn by the Lord, and people are seeing the fruit of it. People are seeing the impact. And so we don't even really have to sell anything, if you will. People just see with their own eyes the fruit and the impact and want to be a part of it.
It's amazing. I think when the leaders of a ministry or church from the top down are bought into those priorities and those values, I think it does just kind of flow down. And you guys had that in your culture and your DNA from the very beginning. And I think now it's just, you know, it becomes more natural, I would guess. After 4 years, it's like, this is just what we do. This is just who we are.
Absolutely.
We are people that pray. We have a prayer room and we do all these other things too.
Yeah.
But yeah, his presence is first. So I love that. I do want to talk more about Antioch, and I want to talk more about missions and some of those kinds of things. Maybe we could just have a few minutes on that, and then we're going to have to go to part two. But have you guys experienced sending? Because I know what happens. You get people ministering to the Lord in worship and prayer, like they were doing in Acts 13 at the church at Antioch. And inevitably, God breaks in and speaks and starts sending. And that's a joyful thing, but it can also be a challenging thing as a leader, I think, of a community when God is sending people out that have been a part of your spiritual family. But have you guys experienced some of that sending that's already happened?
Absolutely. So, I'll tell this part of our story. The Church of Antioch model was such a gift because I think it allowed us to have conversations proactively instead of reactively. And so for us, training and sending actually became one of our six pillars. Before we had anybody to send, we knew that that was a part of the vision and a part of the assignment.
Yeah.
And that made such a difference to be able to kind of make space for that as a priority on the front end, because you're exactly right. Once people get swept into the rhythm of prayer and worship, it's just a matter of time before the Lord starts revealing his heart, before the Lord starts to, really bring clarity to what it is he's inviting them into as it relates to partnering with what he's doing in the earth. And that's been such a joy for us to see people get introduced to the prayer room, and then within a matter of 6 months or a year, have so much clarity on their assignment, and then to know that they have a local church that's going to support them and resource them and send them.
Love that.
I'll speak maybe specifically about our relationship with one of our global partners, MAPS Global, there in Richmond, Virginia. You know, our relationship with MAPS really started from day one, even before day one. One of their main leaders that's leading the mission base in the Levant region, she's from Columbus, Ohio. And when she was transitioning to MAPS, it was the first time that I even heard a ministry or heard an organization that was really marrying prayer, worship, and the emphasis of missions in that way. And so they have been such an inspiration for us and just a big brother, if you will. And it made it very easy to have a ministry, an organization that we trusted, that we knew would care for our people well when it came time to send more so, internationally. And so we've sent I think it's getting close to about a dozen, just brothers and sisters in Christ to MAPS Global to be a part of their school, to experience just hands-on ministry in the frontier missions field. And so many of the people that we've sent, they had no grid for the house of prayer, had no meaningful zeal, if you will, for the Great Commission, let alone in unreached nations. And the only explanation that you can really give for that shift is they sat in the presence of God. They sat before the Lord, reading, praying, and singing the scripture. And then all of a sudden, their hearts get lit up for Jesus' inheritance in the earth.
Yeah.
And just, I don't ever get tired of seeing that process and then knowing that we have the systems, the structure, the resources in place to be able to immediately partner with them. And several ministries, but MAPS, I would say definitely the premier ministry that we've been able to just so confidently send people to and know that they're going to be able to carry out that part of their assignment. And it's just a joy for our community. The entire church benefits from being a part of that process and seeing it unfold.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, we've had R.A. Martinez, who's the founder of MAPS, on the podcast before. And actually, I think we're going to do another episode sometime this season with him, do a deep dive on Antioch, really.
Come on.
Because he's written a book about that. So, yeah, love that. And it's inevitable. You get people in the presence of God, and he starts speaking to them, leading them, sending them, giving them assignments. Sometimes it's right across the road, but sometimes it's across the world, too.
Right.
And you never know.
To your point, it can be challenging. There has to be a commitment to it. It can't be reactionary. It has to be a commitment and a value, because that's what makes it something that everybody can celebrate. And I, 4 years in, for me, it's just like one of the most rewarding things. Even though there is a cost to it, it's so rewarding.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. Well, hey, we're kind of coming to the end of part one here. This has been amazing, Gerald, but we're going to continue the conversation. I want to get into a little bit of some of the disciple-making things that you guys have explored, because I know you guys have gleaned from the disciple-making movements overseas and some of the places where the church is growing the fastest all around the world are in these what are called DMM, disciple-making movements. We've talked about this a little bit with another friend from Ohio, Jordan Baker, who's been on the podcast previously.
Love Jordan.
And we've talked about this a little bit, but curious how that plays into what you guys are doing there as well, and just want to glean from your leadership journey as well. So if you're a leader, you're going to want to tune into part two, because I want to ask Gerald some of the lessons he's learned in leadership, some of the things he's done right, some of the things he's done wrong, and excited to continue this conversation. Part two is for our paid subscribers. So if you would like to sign up, we'll have the link down in the description, down in the show notes, you can do that. And our paid subscribers and our Presence Pioneers partners are the ones that allow us to produce this podcast and create these free resources for you, and very grateful for them. Gerald, this has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.